Health Education Committee will come to order. We'll note that it's April 6, 2011, 8:06 a.m. And Secretary, would you please call roll?
Here.
Representative
Kawasaki.
Here.
Representative
Stephen.
Here.
Representative Feige.
Here.
Chair Dick.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, just a reminder, everybody turning off cell phones. And as it was at the beginning of the year, we still have all those little guys dragging the lunch boxes and fighting with their breakup boots this time of year. And we just need to keep them in mind. And also the students at the university and all those pre-K students that Representative Kawasaki won't let me forget. They're all getting ready to be tugging on their boots. We need to keep them in mind and keep realize that that's why we're here. We have a presentation from Juno Douglas High School, Glenn Gelbrick. Glenn? We have a live performance today. And I don't think we need Google Earth for this one. I think we know where we're at.
I hope so.
Okay, please identify yourself for the record and give us share your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Glenn Gelbrick. I'm the superintendent for Juno School District. I want to thank the committee this morning for allowing us to be here and for this opportunity to share. Joining us today in the audience are the president and vice president of our board, Sally Sadler, president, Andy Story, vice president. There is a listing here on the screen of the other board members who serve the Juno community. And just want to acknowledge their work. They were up quite late last night talking about increased graduation requirements. The Juno School District is made up of 12 schools and a number of educational options, such as Homebridge, homeschool programs, the Juno Community Charter School, which is just two blocks away, our first through third grade Montessori program, and the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy program. We're the fifth largest school district in the state with almost 5,000 students. We're one of the largest employers in the community of Juneau with over 780 employees. Our annual budget is approximately $90 million. Over half of our students are white. Another 23% are of Alaska Native heritage, 9% Asian, 5% Hispanic, 5% multi-ethnic. The work that happens in the Juneau School District is provided by some pretty outstanding teachers, one of whom, Lori Hagee, an elementary music teacher and librarian, is Alaska's current Teacher of the Year. Lori at Glacier Valley has created opportunities for her students to experience music in new ways and to help classroom teachers integrate arts, multiple arts, not just music, into their math instruction, literacy instruction, science instruction. Lori began a new program this year by starting kindergartners who come to school early for to practice with paper violins that when you look at them from 10 feet or further away, look like real violins. The students will graduate from this kindergarten program into an orchestra program at the elementary level. And the picture you see in the bottom left is Kyle Cochran, who is a former violin student, and that picture is he is donating his violin to the program. There is a tremendous amount of community support for this program, an immense number of volunteers. Each of you, I believe, has a handout of our strategic plan. And if you would refer to that, I think it's important for the committee to know, as our community does, that many of our students in the Juneau School District graduate and go on to prestigious universities, strong trade programs and apprenticeships, and or distinguished careers in the military. However, far too many don't graduate. As we see our resources become more and more limited, doing less within our current practice will produce predictable and unacceptable results. We have to do our work differently, and we are. We have a commitment that's been around for decades to meet the needs of every child and prepare them for whatever the post-secondary options are. The plan we have for that is outlined here. You can see it's a long-term plan. It's not a 1 year, then another, then another. It is one plan, and our job is to execute the plan. It focuses on student achievement, formative assessments, which monitor students' progress, and professional development in our teachers, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. Part of doing our work differently, I want to highlight some of the things that we are doing differently. Beginning with early learning, I was pleased to hear the reference to pre-kindergarten, because we know that the students in our school district and nationally start kindergarten with a 5 to 6 year span in their abilities, and that 40% of them do not come to school ready for school. Without intensive instruction and intervention, those students have a 1 in 8 chance of catching up by third grade. It's not something we can wait to do. So in that regard, we have a number of things happening for our pre-K and K students. We have a pre-kindergarten program partnership with the local Lincoln and Haida Head Start, funded by this very body, and we hope to be able to continue that. We have that in two schools. In four of our schools, we have an integrated preschool which pairs up special needs children who are in there at no cost with peers who aren't special needs kids who are in there on a tuition basis. We use a springtime kindergarten kickoff to help do short assessments of kindergarten skills and to help identify which pre-kindergarten students would benefit from a summer kindergarten camp, sort of a leap forward plan to help transition kids to kindergarten. We started that last year, and while we don't have empirical data yet, the anecdotal reports are very promising. To increase the student-teacher contact time, we have one of our elementary schools that is starting some kids late in the day, and other kids, and it's a split shift. So half of the kids show up, and then about an hour later, the other half show up, and about an hour before the end of the day, the early group goes home, the later group stays for an hour. So effectively, at the beginning and ending of the day, the teacher in this kindergarten classroom has half the number of students that she would otherwise have. She's able to personalize learning in a very specific way. And we have two of our schools who are piloting an all-day kindergarten program where all of the students are in the whole day. Relative to instruction, we start with clearly defined world-class standards, clearly defined targets. We support these by using professional development to build common instructional practice, not uniform instructional practice, but a common band of instructional practice district-wide. We're using instructional coaches to ensure that when we take time to invest in professional development, this has its best opportunity to show up in day-to-day practice in the classroom. So this is focused first on literacy and then mathematics and science. We invest 1 hour every other week in an early release of students. So students go home early every other Monday, and we hold our teaching staff in what we term professional learning communities, which is really nothing more than teams of teachers who look at students' progress toward those world-class standards and ask the question, how are they doing? And based on the answer to that question, what interventions do we need to provide for which students? A little more about professional learning communities. It's a huge body of literature in our profession right now. You see the three core questions that guide those teams. What do we want students to know or be able to do? How do we know if they do? That's what our interim assessments are for. And then the key use of that 1 hour every other week is, so given where kids are, now what? What do we do right now? Not at the end of the year, not in some sort of summative assessment, but right now, what do we do for our kids? And so from that, teachers make plans that can be in place tomorrow as opposed to next year. As we look at the next slide, you also have a handout that articulates some of the career tech program offerings that we have. We opened a second comprehensive high school in Juneau 3 years ago, and we have an alternative high school, and the effect of that is that we have smaller, more personalized learning environments for high school youngsters. We have courses that are offered in alignment with national career clusters. One example of that would be our ACE Academy, which is Architecture, Construction, Engineering, a class that builds a house and sells it. This year's house was designed by a student in the class. And the data was given last night at the board meeting. I think there are three girls in that class, and the student leading the project is a girl. And so there's hope. We offer health science, culinary arts, STEM, and business programs. We've increased the number of tech prep classes that are articulated with the University of Alaska Southeast from 7 to 20. And more of those are in the works. And last night we had a joint work session with our UAS to talk about other alignments. We're blurring the lines between high school and post-secondary. We have apprenticeships with carpeting, operating engineers, plumbers and pipefitters, Local 262, the Carpenters Union. All of these add up to a more personalized textual learning opportunity for kids. And then finally, just in terms of programs, I want to describe for you very briefly, we've implemented a program called AVID this year. It stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. There's two other AVID classrooms in Alaska. We have four that we implemented this year. It really is all about students who are typically underrepresented in post-secondary options. The program helps talented but often underperforming students learn important work and study habits, and prepares them for college and or other post-secondary options. We're making progress in student achievement. We are seeing greater success in key areas. Six of our schools met adequate yearly progress in 2010. We see modest gains in reading. 85% of our students are proficient in reading, 72% in writing, and 72% in math. Given those numbers, clearly our best work lies ahead of us. And again, we're committing to doing whatever is necessary to increase the success of these kids. We've seen an increasing trend in our graduation rate, hitting a high of 76% district-wide in 2009. Last year, we saw a slight reduction, and inside that data, both of our comprehensive high schools saw an increase in the graduation rate. Our alternative high school saw a decline, and at that setting, it is student-by-student conversations, which is what obviously went for everyone. I know this is quick, but I heard we are at time constraints. I want to thank you all for your leadership to the citizens and schools of Alaska. You have difficult decisions ahead, and we're grateful for your support and advocacy for education. If you have questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those. If I may help in any way in your deliberations, or if you'd like to see any of our programs firsthand, if you'd like to be able to come out and see AVID or one of our tech prep programs or one of these pre-K or kindergarten transition programs, you can reach me at the number that was on the screen. It's 523-1702. And we'd be happy to set up an opportunity for you. With that, thank you very much.
Any questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out on your early in learning part, the staggered kindergarten school day. Now, does that apply to all of your all-day kindergartens or just some of them? And if it's some of them, are you doing comparisons between the readiness of the students between those two kinds of class structures?
Okay. A year ago, we didn't have any of those. This year, we have three different models that we're looking, or three different classrooms, so district-wide, three classrooms, one of which is the staggered kindergarten approach, and the other two are just all of the students are in kindergarten all day in those classrooms. So we have one or two kindergarten classrooms in each of our six elementary schools, and so, you know, less than half of our classrooms have that different approach, and we're monitoring what kind of results we get with that in terms of student success, and particularly in literacy, in comparison with what those teachers have seen from their kids in their neighborhood before.
Follow up?
And a follow up on that, you had the early release Mondays, where they were having a 1 hour every 2 weeks to look at individual student progress. So I presume that's across the entire school. And but I didn't, there was a question, what do we do if they're not making progress? But can you explain what some of those plans or techniques are that when you identify kids aren't making progress, what kind of reaction do the schools or the teachers take?
Well, again, I want to underscore that this is a first year of this project. We didn't have these kinds of conversations before. And so what's happening now is that we're noticing in the data things that we didn't notice in the data before, specifically which kids are struggling. So there's an opportunity in those sections to talk about the need for reteaching or teaching differently, skills that students have. We have classrooms where we have schools where they shift the configuration of the kids to focus on a particular skill. So if you have 60 students in third grade and 20 of them clearly are not getting this particular skill that we've all been focusing on in the last 2 weeks, then let's pull those youngsters and let's provide some intervention instruction. And that could happen during an activity time. It could happen during the regular, if it's math, the regular math time, but we're going to bring those kids together. We're getting more focused on not just the kids are struggling in math, but what specific part of math are they struggling with, and what can we do about it next week or tomorrow. So it looks different at each school. We also have some people who are using noontime study opportunities for students. It's a pretty wide range. What will happen in this process is, as teams use interventions, they'll be sharing what those interventions produce. So we thought if we pulled these five youngsters together and we did this, we felt it would make a difference. Did it? And if it did, we want to report that out as a promising practice. If it didn't, we want to let other people who are saying, I think we'll try this, let them know, you know, it didn't work so well for us. We thought it would make a difference too.
Thanks, Ed. And Mr. Chairman, just one
follow up again.
Follow up is that, you know, that would be very interesting for us. I understand that this is your first year doing that, but if you wouldn't mind, as you do those assessments and those develop those techniques of what worked and what didn't work, if you could, if you're going to do that as a report or anything, and send that to us so that we can share those more broadly as what techniques were found to work in those assessments, following up on those assessments, and what didn't, maybe we can make it so that other people don't have to go through the same, experimenting with something that didn't work. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your split shift kindergarten, how do you work the logistics of that? Do the kids end up having to hang around for a period of time, or do you have bus schedule, or are the parents just picking them up and dropping them off?
I believe in those cases we're running a bus ride for them. But we don't, for half-day kindergartners, we don't transport during the middle of the day anyway. So it's a fairly, they've worked it out at the district level. I'd be happy to get the specific information to you about how that logistically is happening. Dr. Semrek is the teacher.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pretty excited that people are thinking about having kindergarten more than just a half a day. 60 years ago, I went to kindergarten all day. You know, and I'm kind of amazed that nowadays most kindergartens are only half days. Did everybody here go whole day?
Whole day.
Whole day.
Half day.
Okay, every one of us right here went a full day except one.
That's why. That's, we should question that.
But I find that very interesting, and it would be interesting to pool the whole body and and see. Does that make a difference? But who knows? Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question about the, you mentioned having the Tlingit language, and was that, isn't it kindergarten level?
It's K through 5.
K to 5.
Language classes are offered at high school, or the middle school and high school as well.
Oh, okay.
But at K-5, at Harborview Elementary School, it is a self-contained program. I mean, that's the program you're in all day. Oh. So, that would be, if ever you wanted to visit one of our programs and you had a list of three, that would need to be one of the three.
I'll certainly come visit. I was curious, are there any non-native students involved in that?
Yes.
I found my experience is surprising that when you teach native language classes, sometimes it's over 50% of non-natives. They're just fascinated to learn the language. So, very good. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And Mr. on slide 6 that we have, or page 6, the graduation rate of the 70%, that means that we've still got 30% that aren't. And I guess I'd like to relate to you what 2 years ago when we were looking at increasing the mandatory compulsory education. We had a student here that was going to the alternative school at the time, and the way she answered it was, well, it doesn't matter. I dropped out of school a year and a half before I was 16, and nobody ever came and saw me. And that I guess one of the things that we found, and we're doing more investigations on it, is that the individual student advisor for every student, not just those that are having trouble, in the Kenai Peninsula borough, these were voluntary, each school, each of the high schools did their own program, increased the graduation rate from 12 to 15% without any cost, without any additional cost, just assigning every student in school had their teacher mentor, their teacher advisor, their teacher advocate, and there were several different designs of those programs. So I guess what I would just share is that the Task Force on Higher Education just met, finished up its thing. One of its primary suggestions, recommendations, is that every school and every university, in fact, a requirement in the scholarship program is that an institution that doesn't provide an individual advisor or counselor will not be able to receive the scholarships. So I'm just wanting to make sure that we as a committee share what we've been hearing over the last 3 years, is that the technique that involves every student with one of the teachers, so that somebody in that school definitely knows their name and sees them in the hall and does all this thing, and not strictly connected with academics, but just connected with students, that follows them all the way through their career in that school, has been the most effective at increasing that graduation rate. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't see that on your strategic plan, and so I wanted to let you know what we had heard here.
Very good. You know, we always say we're going to keep this down to 10 minutes. It's always so interesting. It always goes on. Here we are at 8:30. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your presentation. It's this is one of the more meaningful parts of our meetings here. Thank you. Okay, the purpose of the meeting today, we are going to hear House Bill 145 and H.J.R. 16 with the can finish our public testimony. I promised the folks they got left out the other night they'd have a chance to testify, and then we'll move on to H.B. 143. And but to start with, I'd like to take finish public testimony on 145, and I understand John Alcantor has a time crunch, so we'll make sure he gets to testify first.
you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Good morning, members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for 13,000 public school employees of NEA Alaska, basically from Metlakatla to Barrow and most points in between. I'm also a parent of four children, including three currently attending public school in the Mat-Su and receiving a great education. I'm here today again, and thank you for having me here on this bill, to ensure this committee is aware that the members of NEA Alaska strongly oppose House Bill 145 and, by extension, H.D.R. 16. Article 7, Section 1 of Alaska's Constitution is crystal clear. I quote from Alaska's Constitution, "The legislature shall, by general law, establish and maintain a system of public school open to all children of the state and may provide for other public educational institutions. Schools and institutions so established shall be free from sectarian control. No money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution." End quote. NEA Alaska has met with the supporters of House Bill 145, and while the interaction was pleasant, it was pointed out this legislation does not ensure religious or private schools will accept all Alaskan children, does not ensure teachers will be certified, it does not ensure the same testing requirements that public schools must go through. In past testimony, the administrator principal of Cook Inlet Academy in Soldotna said, quite frankly, they must be able to screen applicants because one of the reasons it doesn't cost them as much to educate a child is they don't have the facilities or the staff to help students with serious special needs. This is one of the fallacies of any voucher-type legislation. Public education is provided for all who wish to attend. This is indeed a mechanism by which the public is assured equity for Alaska's children. Public schools accept all students, regardless of religious affiliation, learning style, or physical needs. The state of Alaska is required to provide this in all public programs for which it provides funding. As I have stated, NEA Alaska does not support the passage of House Bill 145, H.D.R. 16, or any similar attempts to provide public funding for private schools. Thanks for your time, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions from committee? Thank you, John.
Thanks, sir.
Briefly. And Rod McCoy, if you'd want to testify while we're getting onto the right version, sir.
Chairman Dick, I'm a retired school teacher. It's always a pleasure to come down here to Juneau and speak. I believe in America. I believe in the American democracy. It's been a good part of my career expressing those strong feelings to students in my class. I believe, like many do, that the Constitution of our United States was driven in part by God and guided by God in its creation. And I believe strongly of the importance of separation of church and state, not in any way to disregard the importance of church. But we in our America have lived a long time without that sense of oppression that the writers of our Constitution recognized when they wrote into that Constitution the need for a separation between state affairs and church affairs. I don't know about any of you, but I have a really strong passion for my religion, and it's a passion that I feel very protective about my religion. And that kind of passion and protection that drives people would drive them, I believe, although I haven't experienced it because I've been in America that hasn't been in those circumstances for years, guide them to away from a more rational approach that we need in our state affairs. When we heard testimony the other night, one of the things that was said was there would be an equitable opportunity for both private schools and public schools. I beseech you, that is entirely untrue. The public schools under the scenario there would be required to keep each and every student. The private schools in 145 would have no such requirements. There is some kind of a structure for entry, but there is no structure that they retain students, even if they're difficult to teach. And you also have, in this kind of segregation, the opportunity for there to be a real difference in the student makeup of both schools. But if you take a student who has the luxury of having parents who really care and are willing to spend the morning driving across town to another school, that is a different type of student than the one who would not put such attention, even though both may choose either public or private. So then you start getting even more of a segregation. Money Magazine, not too long back, did an extensive report on research that took not the results of the school performance, but looked at like circumstances for like circumstances. Money Magazine, a rather conservative magazine, came out very clearly and said, people who are investing in private education are getting no more bang for their buck than they would if they had attended public schools. People who think that, well, we just need to do some change, must keep in mind, will that change improve things? Will make it better for those students that Mr. Chairman Dick was talking about going to school this morning? Or would it make it worse? If you go about changing the constitution of our state, I ask you, please, walk slowly. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else here that would like to testify? Representative Keller, do you want to... would you like to come in and wrap up your thoughts on this, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. Again, the bill is to provide public funding for the cost of attending school K-12 at a school of the parents' choice, whether it be a private school or a public school. That's the intent of the bill. If you have any questions on the specifics, I'd be more than happy to respond.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, is there going to be a CS offered, and if so, is the sponsor going to walk us through that?
We already adopted
a version D.
Version D. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, did you want me to walk through it, or?
We've already done that.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Pruitt.
I just want to, for clarification from the sponsor, especially after the testimony that we just heard, I want to make it clear on the resolution and the change that takes place in the Constitution. That is, we would be voting as a body to put it on the ballot, correct? It would be the people voting that would actually change the Constitution. Is that correct?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, that's exactly correct. Your vote for this resolution is a vote to move it on to judiciary, where I'm sure the wording will be evaluated. Then it goes to the floor, and it has to pass the floor on a two-thirds vote. And the purpose of the resolution is to get the question in front of the people of the state of Alaska. We have the legislature is not in our purview to change the Constitution, so that is exactly the intent.
Thank you, Representative Keller.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And can you explain to me one more time how the school district is going to administer the program and they'll accept schools for participation, but they won't have any authority for monitoring? Is that correct? So that they're going to have the responsibility without any authority to do anything if the program is not performing or anything else, if that's going to be
I represent a seat through the chair. That's not correct. If you look in I'm playing with two versions here, but the school must comply with either 14.45.030 or 110.2130. And what that is a description of your exempt and your non-exempt schools. And they must be either one. If they're non-exempt, they have to comply with every state law and regulation. If they are exempt, then there's quite a list of things that they must do, including giving the superintendent, I'm sorry that I'm looking here through my notes, I'll just try to do it from memory. They have to give the superintendent, they have to keep track of the students, they have to give a student count to the superintendent of the district, and they have to keep records on the student, report to the district, they have to keep records of the tests results of the children, get those to the parents. They have to have file an enrollment form for every child signed by the parents and signed by the school administrator. So there's a level of administration that is there. There's also regulation that is bound to happen and expected to happen by the department on how this all will be work its way out.
Follow up?
Yeah. I understand that the bill calls for the program to be administered by the school district, and I understand the financial accountability. I'm talking about the educational accountability. It seems to be that, can you walk me through how the school district that is going to be responsible for administering the program is or is not going to be responsible for the educational responsibility that takes place in those in the distribution of those scholarships?
The district would be involved only to the extent, I guess, that they would be the ones that would have the information about the school, but it's a state law that the participating school would give tests, for example, nationally normed tests of the children, and those records would be kept, and that's all part of it. But the district would not be involved in that unless the regulations are. I would assume the regulations will define how the district is involved in that. But you're right. I mean, there's no. That's the whole point, you know, is to give the other schools the ability to compete.
And one more follow-up.
So
if the schools that are receiving these vouchers or these scholarships are not performing as well as the public schools, there is a report to the parents that the students are not learning as well. There's no accountability or mechanism for the school district defunding the schools or the school accountabilities. And thanks.
Representative Seaton, the chair, I have a lot of faith in the fact that the parents would not choose a school that is doing a bad job, and that's the whole point, is to get that information out there, and the parents the ones to make the choice. So. I'm missing the point of your question because I
the market will work. If there's a school that is non-performing, I can't imagine parents sending their schools to a non-performing school, or student to us, kids to a non-performing school. Worthy for
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if they have to follow the rules that regular schools do, then I would assume that means that they will have to stop screening kids. The kids that want to come, come. And the screening process will have to stop.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, the way this is set up, a participating school can supplement the application of the students. And as far as exactly what the criteria is on that, not laid out in the bill, we are giving the private schools freedom and independence on it. There's no question about that. But there are requirements on private schools, both by IRS and by state law, that they can't discriminate. And some of the criteria for changing that has to do with preference for siblings. Another one might be just the overcrowding of a particular facility, like we do in the public schools now. And so there will be elements like that in each school.
So their screening process will stop then?
The question is unclear to me through the chair. The screening process.
Well, the one school principal or the head person of the school said that there's a screening process that they use. And so they get to choose who comes to that school and who doesn't. But to a regular school, there's not the choice of that. We have to take everyone. And so, if the state's going to be paying for the private schools to be having people change and go to a different school, then they have to take everyone also. They can't pick and choose like they do now.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, they can't pick and choose based on race, gender, beliefs, what have you. That's part of the state law. It doesn't matter. Now or then.
Okay, so I want it on the record that that's what your intentions are, that there will be no screening, of what happens to who goes to each school.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, this is based on choice. So if a school says, for example, let's take a religious school that has a statement of faith, and they provide a qualify their application by saying you have to sign a statement of faith in order to go to the school. Again, that is a parental choice issue, and any participating school can put criteria in. So, if that is the intent of your question, no. I mean, there's not.
But if I'm a good
follow up.
If I'm a good parent and I care about my child so much, and I think that that's a good school, why couldn't I bring my child there if I wasn't a believer? This is your example.
You mean on the statement of faith?
Yes.
That'd be a choice of the parent. I mean,
they
want to sign the statement of faith in a particular school, and that's their choice. It's great. I understand.
Okay, so the school is not going to screen people and say who can come to my school and who can't.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't think so in the sense that you're using the terms. There may be supplements in the application that somebody will not go to the school, will choose to not go to the school because of the requirements that are there. But I think it's pretty clear that we want to leave the those choices, to whatever school is participating.
Follow up. So let's change it a little bit and say it's not a faith-believing school. It's just a regular school, a private school, but my child is handicapped in some way. And the school will say, oh, you can't come here. We're not prepared for that. In the regular schools, we have to deal with that. And so if the state is going to pay for this, then the schools are going to have to start ponying up and saying, whoever comes, we have to take care of them, just like the public schools do.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, if I have a handicapped child, I would pick the school that has the best services for the child.
Excuse me, I have a thought here. We're discussing minutia, and I'd like to present a thought to the committee, and we can go from there. There's obviously been strong testimony on both sides. There's obviously a lot of emotion, and I have really, I'm not double-minded, but I've had to reconcile a lot of pieces of this myself. In terms of if this bill were to pass and actually become law, I have a hard time to wrap my mind around what the final outcome would look like. I don't have a problem passing this out of committee. We want to discuss details right now. I don't have a problem passing it out of committee for one reason. First off, it's going to see other committees. It's going to see the House floor. It's going to see the other body. But what I really think is that there's what I really think is that our constituents sent us here to make decisions, and that's our job. That we shouldn't have to call them up and, you know, wish I should vote yes or no on how to fold a flag. You know, they sent me here to vote on those things. But this is it's a huge issue. It's going on nationwide. This it's not like this question is happening in isolation. And I'm very confident that if it got through both bodies, it is going to end up in front of the people of Alaska. And I think that's really where the dialogue needs to take place, where people in every community, it's at least going to get people discussing educational issues. People are going to be having these very conversations right now over the dinner table and at town meetings. So if I thought our decision was the decision was going to get implemented, I desperately want to do homework all through the interim. But realizing that we're just at this point, we're taking testimony, where everybody's clarifying their own personal thoughts. I don't have a hard time passing it out of committee, and that doesn't even mean that I'm in favor of the bill, but I am in favor of allowing the discussion to continue beyond this committee and actually in stirring up that conversation within the people of Alaska and letting the people that testified so powerfully to us have a sense that they have had a chance to lobby their neighbors and to really to express themselves in the public forum. It would really grieve my heart to think that something this important to people would just be the decision would be made by those in government. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Wilson's comments, there was an earlier version, the A version of the bill, the I version of the bill that was just handed out again. Had a statement dealing with the district approving participating schools for the scholarship, and it actually specifically cited that the discrimination in admission and hiring practices was part of this bill. The version that we have in front of us has that carved out. It also goes on to state that they would admit students based on a random selection process, but could apply the preference for siblings. That was specifically cut out of this bill. From my point of view, it looks like this work draft that we have in front of us does specifically discriminate against students, and they will be allowed to in the future. And I don't know if that's where the sponsor of the bill wants to go with this, but I think it's the appropriate venue that we discuss the policies on discriminating against students in this body or in this committee rather than just passing it on to the next. I'm not willing to move this out of committee. And if we take a vote, I will not support it moving.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I understand where we're talking about going before the vote of the people. However, House Bill 145 will not go before the vote of the people. The constitutional amendment, House Bill 145 is unconstitutional currently.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about a potential constitutional amendment that would allow us to have a House Bill 145 as constitutional. But, you know, when we have bills, we need to get into the minutia of the bills because that's our job. The constitutional amendment, maybe we want to recommend that as a vote of the people, but the people don't get to vote on 145. So I just wanted to clarify that what we're supposed to do is get into the details of the bill. We could get into the details of the constitutional amendment, but the people would vote on that as well. So thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair, if I might, there's one clarification I'd like to make. There was some confusion, I think, if I remember right, it was on the record about the transportation element. And I just wanted to clarify that the intent of the sponsor and the way I believe it's expressed on page 2, paragraph C there, 14 to 17, is that the district may participate in transporting the students. It's an option they have. And the reason it's written that way is that the local school district will be able to use the students that are in the participating schools in their student count. And as I understand it, from what I've been told, you know, there's federal money that comes to the district directly for transportation based on the student count. So rather than get into the details of just how that would be allocated in the state law, which we wouldn't want to do, it just leaves the option up to the goodwill of the district based on the money they receive on that program.
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the concerns I have actually with that specific piece, Representative Keller, is the, and I'll give you an example from within the Anchorage School District, and kind of what takes place psychologically when you tell people that your district or someone may be able to do something. They don't see may, they see, well, it's in there, I should have it. We have a couple schools within our school district. For instance, Rogers Park, it has a gifted program. There's a different like Spanish immersions and even German and Chinese and various immersion programs throughout the city. There's also the ABC schools. And I once heard a parent of a student going to one of those locations who expressed their frustration that they were mad that they couldn't get transportation to the location that is a school district location for their child to attend there. And one of my concerns on that is the fiscal side of the things. If we had allowed those individuals that were coming from outside the district to go to those schools, that it would increase the cost. And essentially what we're doing is we're giving that opportunity, and there's a fiscal side to it. And I think it could be pretty exorbitant, to tell you the truth, especially in a city like Anchorage, where we have where we have some of these schools throughout, but they can decide to go to schools on the opposite side of town. And now we've got schools that are crisscrossing, especially when we don't actually at this point in time offer it within even the district. So while I'm not going to stand and block the bill, as you and I have actually talked about, I do express concern about the transportation part of it, and the part that while we're already giving, we're talking about potentially expanding the state's role in the budget just in the bill itself. I think the idea of parental choice is because if the people of the state, this gets through everything, and the state decide to change things, and this goes through, it is still parental choice. And by making that choice at that point in time to go wherever, that is something that I believe would lie on the parent. We're about to give some parents a break if this were to go through, obviously, on tuition. But if you're going to send your child to another program because of whatever you feel, just like in the Anchorage School District, I feel that portion should at least lie upon the parents to do that. And so I'm just let you know that I may, if we decide to put this through, may put forth a conceptual amendment to pull the transportation part specifically. I won't touch the rest of your bill.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt, and I think I really understand your concerns, and I appreciate you bringing them up. I will say that this does, in fact, put the burden on the district to decide whether or not. It does not cost them anything. By statute, doesn't cost them anything. It may cost them something if they submit to the will of the local people. But I also want to point out that there's a also the opportunity. I mean, they will be paid for this because, in other words, there's nothing in here that requires them to expend beyond. Well, there's two levels, but one of them is beyond 100% of what a similarly situated student would get. And the other thing is that, you know, they can say no and be still getting the money. I mean, that's within the statute framework, you know, what they can do. And, yes, it does put the burden back on the local school district. I understand your concern.
Can we call a brief at ease? House Education Committee, come back to order. Sorry for the wait. Representative Pruitt.
Can I ask Representative Keller to address the transportation again, please?
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. I've been given information in the at ease that if we were to just remove that paragraph on the transportation from the bill, that it could be decided that the district has to provide transportation because it would be one of the schools, a participating school in the district. And so we need to proceed carefully. In as much as the, school district has to provide transportation for anybody, a participating school could be countered, you know, as any other school. In fact, that's logical. And so there may be a pitfall if we just were to take that section out.
Representative Pruitt.
So I just want to follow up with that. Mm-hmm. I will, based on the discussion that we have had, I will not put forth the amendment. I do want to make it clear that the legislative intent here is to not open up the can of worms, essentially, to provide transportation for every child, no matter what school they go to. And by leaving this in, we're trying to protect the state and the fiscal responsibility that we have to ensure that this is a school choice, and it would be a choice to send them there. And the fact that if you're going to choose this, then you're going to choose to also drive your kids to wherever you need to go. And I want to make sure that aspect, and again, this has nothing to do with the rest of the bill. I am only focusing on that transportation part. I'm not getting into the minutia of every other thing and what we're talking about, but based on what the title, parental choice, it means you're choosing to send your child to there, and you accept that responsibility to drive. So thank you.
The intent of the sponsor.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Just to get on the record of what the intent is on the transportation portion. So is it your intent that a district could provide transportation to some schools and not to other schools? That is, some private schools and not to other private schools?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that would be up to the district to determine, yes. That is the whole point of this. The whole bill is choice, and that would extend that choice down to the district level of when and where to provide transportation, and it would have to do with things like where the participating school is located. If it, you know, if it was in a different town, you know, I don't know, or in the district, you know, it'd be the choice of the district. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Just to get that clear statement on the record is that the intent of this bill is that a district could supply transportation to some students within their district, while even those with scholarships, and not provide transportation to other students within those same set of private schools. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
It's important to clear that up. Representative Wilson.
Okay. So Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just want to make sure I understand this, too. So what you're saying, that it would be perfectly okay for a district to say, we will pay for the kids to go into this school, but not this school. And I can perceive that maybe we had buses going right by there so we could pick somebody up. But over here, that's out of our district lines and everything, and so we aren't going to do that one. And I am concerned, because if the district has that option, I don't want some parent suing the district saying it's not fair because they're sending somebody to they're paying for the school, the transportation here, but they're not paying for the transportation over here. So I just want to make sure I want to hear what you have to say about that type of a situation.
Thank you, Representative Wilson, through the chair. The bill doesn't really get specific at all. It says the district may.
Okay. I want to know.
Beyond that, it's interpretation of what that means, what the may means, and my interpretation and intent of the sponsor is to give the district the choice based on good sense of what the do. That's my interpretation of what we have written. The wording of the bill simply says the school district may, which implies that they're not forced to. It's not shall.
Mr. Chairman, okay. May I follow up?
Follow on one quick question, but we have a solution for this. So,
okay. Go ahead. But you're not saying what I just said. So I want to know what your intent is, because many times our intentions do make a difference if something comes up. And you're not willing to admit that your intent, you're evading my question.
I apologize through the chair, Representative Wilson. I did not mean to do that. It's my intent and my understanding that the school district will be able to choose whether or not to provide transportation to children based on where the children need to go. In other words, yes, that's my intent, is that they can make that choice. So who they're going to transport and who they're not going to transport. What I added to that, Representative Wilson, was that the wording on the bill doesn't get that specific. You know, that's my intent, but the wording of the bill isn't that specific. If you wanted to get specific, I guess you could. You have the opportunity to do that, and that's your jurisdiction. But the bill says that the district may.
And I guess this is what I want to say. I know what human nature is, and I know what parents will push the button as far as they can. And so this is a concern that I have.
Okay, well, here's my thought. I do want to respect the people that came for House Bill 143 who have been sitting here for a while. Perhaps I think we're going to hold House Bill 145 until Friday. We'll vote on Friday. But Representative Pruitt, if you'd make a motion.
I move that we pass out of committee House Joint Resolution 16, which is /A, and move it to Judiciary.
I object.
Okay. Discussion? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the separation of these two things, because 145, of course, is not currently constitutional, and so I think that we as a committee are glossing over the details of that bill because we're thinking, well, it's not constitutional right now, but if it becomes constitutional but we're passing at the same time, I think that if this was a bill that we knew was within constitutional purview, we would be taking a lot more time looking at a lot more details of the educational effects of House Bill 145. So as a constitutional amendment, it'll have to pass the bodies and have to be enacted by the people of the state. And if that becomes such, then we would be looking at the very details of a law that we would be knowing that if it passed, it would be enacted. So not conditional effect if a constitutional amendment passed. So I'm willing to have H.R. 16 leave committee and go to judiciary for consideration of the constitutional issue, and I appreciate the separation of these two issues.
Any other comment? Representative Kawasaki still? Okay. Secretary, please call roll.
Yes.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Sisna is absent. Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Chair Dick.
Yes.
I have 5 yeas, 1 nay.
Okay. Representative Keller.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for the committee for moving the resolution. I do want to add one thing, is that on the record, and that is that the resolution and the bill cannot ultimately be separated. They're separated in the sense that the resolution is going to judiciary next, and the bill is going to finance next. I appreciate your commitment, and I would encourage and request respectfully that the bill also gets moved. Thank you.
And we will hear 145 on Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Brief piece while we all sign. The committee will come back to order. Where were we? Okay. Representative Peterson, do you want to share your thoughts with us, sir?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate you having this hearing this morning on this important piece of legislation. House Bill 143 would protect our students and school districts from having to pay for inflation by fewer educational opportunities being available to the students. Inflation happens every year, and if the base student allocation is not adjusted to cover annual losses to inflation, then local districts have to make up the losses by cutting services or through increased municipal taxes. And for many districts, taxation is not a legal available option, or there is no tax base. The base student allocation and the foundation formula are the primary means for providing state support to local K-12 education in Alaska. Over the last 3 years, there have been statutory increases to the BSA, which have allowed school districts to operate with the knowledge of how much state support they would receive through these years. This bill will also allow for better multi-year planning, since districts will know that the BSA will be protected from inflation. During this 3-year period, the Department of Education would be tasked with conducting a professional study of the true changes in the cost to K-12 education, and the department would submit a recommended BSA amount for consideration before the 2014 regular legislative session. This would allow the legislature to consider any changes to the cost of providing education in Alaska that might not be reflected in the Consumer Price Index. Alaska has many complicated issues that must be addressed to improve our education system, and I know that this committee has been hard at work on many different bills this session. I certainly don't think that this bill solves all the problems, but I know that if we make our students pay for inflation through fewer educational opportunities, that would only make things worse. There has been some suggestion that school districts should not receive an inflation adjustment because people are not satisfied with the efforts to increase graduation and student performance. However, in Anchorage, our district has been making steady progress. As a matter of fact, we have been increasing graduation rates over the past decade, and the dropout rate is the lowest of all the 5 major urban school districts in the state. Anchorage has implemented several innovative programs to improve graduation, including the successful graduation coach program. And these programs can find themselves on the chopping block when the BSA loses ground to inflation. I urge you to support this bill to allow school districts to perform better, have better multi-year budgeting, and ensure that our students do not have to pay the cost of inflation with fewer educational opportunities. And also, just one additional personal note. My sister has been a first grade teacher in the school district in Anchorage for 16 years. And on numerous occasions, she has hit me up for donations to help pay for school supplies, because they always seem to run out about this time of year, as a matter of fact. And she has paid for supplies numerous times out of her own pocket over the years, and I'm sure many other teachers have done the same. And there's also many schools that have gone to collecting box tops to try to provide additional items for their students. And so I'd hate to have to see us go backwards and to where to provide education funding that the teachers would be paying out of their own pockets, or they would the students would have to have cookie sales or that type of thing. And my legislative aide, David Dunsmore, will do a sectional analysis for you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Dunsmore, Chief of Staff to Representative Peterson. This will be just really quick, but I just wanted to run through the sections of the bill. Section 1 raises the base student allocation to 5,838. That would be an increase of $158 over the current amount. But that amount would only be effective for the upcoming fiscal year. In Section 2, Subsection 1 establishes that the Department of Education shall annually adjust the BSA to fiscal years 2013 and 2014 to reflect the Consumer Price Index for the Anchorage area, and that CPI index was chosen because the base student allocation, Anchorage uses the base for the BSA. Subsection 2 of Section 2 would have the department conduct a review of the actual changes in educational costs per student in each district, which would give the legislature information about education-specific factors that might not be included in the CPI. And subsection 3 would have the department submit a report before January 10, 2014, providing a recommendation to the 28th legislature for an amount for the BSA for fiscal year 2015. And section 3 establishes an effective date of July 1st, 2011. Yeah.
Any questions from committee? Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, because we have so many people that are online, would it be okay for us to pass on our questions and go directly to the testifiers first?
That would be fine with me.
Good thought. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Okay, I do have a request to get to Fairbanks first. Let's see, Babes Hudson, are you from North Pole? Are you in Fairbanks? If so, identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
Hi, I'm Babes Hudson. I'm from North Pole, originally from Nemana. Scott knows me as the pie lady down there. I want to talk about the bill. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have total 8 kids, but I have 5 in school right now, 1 in elementary, 2 in middle, and 2 in high school. And this bill is going to ensure that our education at its level will continue or even get better. And why I came here is I'm also the PTA president out there at the high school, and I'm getting involved in what the school, how they will help all the children out there. Now, I became a stay-at-home mom 5 years ago when I adopted 3 special needs kids, and 2 of them are in high school right now. The quality of that school out there with their after-school program, the other programs they have to help me out there, the counseling, has enabled me to put these kids that I adopted on track, as well as the 2 I have. you know, they right now my kids have perfect attendance, two of them 6 years in a row, and they have anywhere from a 2.5 to a 4.0. And one of my special needs is a 4.0. So I'm, you know, and this is how we assure that our schools are going to continue to put out numbers like this for my children. I mean, I'm a living example that, you know, education and the time that the teachers put into the admin, you know, my family is a living example of how education is helping families up here in the interior. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Pete Lewis, are you in Fairbanks? If so, identify yourself for the record and give your testimony as concisely as possible. We do have quite a bit, quite a few people here. Go ahead, Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pete Lewis, Superintendent Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. We are in support of House Bill 143. We think it is forward thinking with the tie to the inflation factor out of Anchorage for the following 2 years. We like the fact that the study will continue with regard to the base student allocation. We strongly support the bill in the fact that it allows us to be forward thinking and planning so that we are not.
That's what I thought. We lost him. Do we lose him?
And we'll go to the next.
Okay, while we breathe at ease, did we lose all? Thank you. We're now it's session now. It's
back in order.
Back in order. There we go. Pete, are you there? If you are, we can't hear you. Did you push the mute button, Pete? Okay, we're going to move on to Kenai, LIO, and Fairbanks. If you can fix whatever's wrong, we'd be glad to continue with your testimony. Is LaDon Drews from Soldotna at the at Kenai, LIO? LaDon, are you there? Okay. Okay, we're going to jump to Kodiak. Stuart McDonald, hello, are you there? Kodiak, identify yourself and who you represent and give your testimony, sir.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. He's testifying in another committee.
Okay, is Bill Watkins there? You Kodiak?
I will get them.
Is Kelly Nash there in Kodiak? I'm doing my best here.
I know. You're trying really hard. They're in the other committee. I will get them. Thanks.
Okay. Fairbanks is back on. Pete Lewis, I didn't know where to tell you. I didn't know where. Pick up where you left off. Pete, maybe recap if you would, Pete. We really want to hear what you had to say, and somehow we were cut off.
I just wanted to conclude with this bill allows us to be forward thinking in terms of our planning. It is somewhat frustrating to have to submit a budget when you don't know what final numbers will be, and this will allow us to plan ahead. So again, we strongly support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. I apologize for the technical problems here, and I do need to mention that Representative Tuck is here. If you want to join us, you're more than welcome, sir.
Good, thank you.
Okay. Sue Hall, are you in Fairbanks?
Yes, I am.
If you'd identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and give your testimony.
This is Sue Hall. I'm representing the school board in Fairbanks, and I won't take too much of your time because I know you have a lot of people. But I would just strongly support HB 143. The need for BSA adjustment cannot be overstated as far as I'm concerned. I mean, to expect, in light of the budget surpluses, we have to expect an adjustment for inflation. Really isn't too much to ask, and I think it's an important investment in the future of Alaska for school districts like ours to be cutting budgets. We've already cut $2.5 million out of our budget, and if there isn't an inflationary increase, we will have to cut an additional $2.5 million. And to be doing that sort of cutting, when what we need to do is innovate and do things differently and do more for kids in terms of career tech, et cetera, it's really an unrealistic expectation. So I would urge you to support the bill, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We should get to some people here in the room that are not from Juneau. Brett McGillen, are you here? Say again, sir?
It's an M.
It's just Gilland, no Mick Gilland.
I didn't say Mick. Okay.
Oh, Brett M. Gilland.
There you go.
Brett Gilland. There we go.
Gotcha.
Identify yourself for the record and give your testimony.
Hello, I am Brett Gilland, and I am a teacher at West Anchorage High School. In addition, my wife, I'll note, is a science teacher at Golden View Middle School. Okay. And as I started this school year, I walked into my Algebra 2 classrooms and discovered, much to my surprise, that I had 38 smiling faces looking back at me. Yeah, 38. Two classes of 38. And I was a little overwhelmed, but Algebra 2 kids do all right with that. So then I moved on to my Algebra A class, which is the first year of the two-year Algebra 1 sequence, and discovered 36. Right? These are the kids who most need my one-on-one attention. 36 in a row. Now, the department and my curriculum principal certainly talked to our superintendent about increasing our FTE and hiring another math teacher, because we need one. And what we were told was that it wasn't in the budget. So instead, myself and several other members of the math department took on an extra class period during our planning period. So I no longer have a planning period, and because of that sacrifice, made by myself and by other members of my department, I have managed to drop all of those class sizes to a measly 32 students per class. Algebra A has since increased back to 33 for the transfer A. Now, I know that there are some probably sitting in this room who think there are simply just inefficiencies in how our district allocates its funds in terms of teaching. And you know what? Some days I agree with you. Okay? And because of that, I regularly let my superintendent and my school board know when I see those inefficiencies. And I encourage you, as members who are served by them, to do so likewise. That is a responsible method for effecting change within our schools. Right? What is not responsible is shorting funding to schools throughout the state. Just as with any enterprise, if you underfund education, you will not reduce the inefficiencies in how money is spent. You will simply exacerbate the inefficiencies in how funds are spent. At the very least, this means the state of Alaska has an obligation to ensure that state funding keeps pace with inflation. And don't allow anyone to convince you that other funding for education relieves you of that obligation. For instance, while offsets for energy costs are indeed important in a state like Alaska, which has significant energy concerns, those considerations are distinct from our standard inflation concerns and should be addressed in addition to efforts to maintain funding in the face of inflation, not in spite of or in the face of. Okay? If you fail to uphold the simple duty to actually fully fund education, including consideration for inflation, the state will inevitably find itself with more overcrowded classrooms in which it is impossible to reach students with the individualized instruction they need, or, if you're lucky, you will simply find more teachers like myself who teach classes all day long with no dedicated time for curriculum planning, no dedicated time for assessment of student evaluations, and no dedicated time for reaching out and interacting with parents. That situation is simply unsustainable, and it will destroy the educational opportunities for students in Alaska.
Any question from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And you're the math teacher, so you're the right guy to ask the question. Consumer Price Index. We've had the Social Security Administration for 2 years in a row. It was zero or a negative inflation rate. Consumer Price Index could do the same thing. If that happens, how do we take money away from and decrease the budget of the school district, all the school districts across the state, based on consumer price index if it falls?
So the first thing I would note is all of my comments today are meant to concern a minimum obligation you have. Certainly I'm not saying that were a situation to change and consumer price index fell, you would be obligated to cut. That would be, I think, an insane conclusion. Second of all, in a time where, heck, I'll just look at the price of gas and have watched it in the last month jump, what, 50 cents? And that feeds down to, what, my eggs, my milk, anything that comes in from outside, which is quite a bit here. I find it a little bit ludicrous to be concerned about the situation we would be in were prices not to be rising. And second of all, why would you want to budget based on the assumption that we'll actually have a lower or low growth within this state in terms of businesses, and what that leads to is inevitably slow but steady inflation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow-up question. I'm just talking about how the bill is written. We had a bill similar to this last time, and we tried to make sure that it wasn't adjusted based on the CPI, but based on increases in the CPI, so it got us out of that problem. But we can look at that. But I guess my other question is Consumer Price Index a good mark if 85% of the school district's budgets are on wages and are not on index to supplies, and we are looking at a consumer price index which is based on supplies? I mean, is that the appropriate index?
Let me say this two ways. First of all, I honestly don't know that I am the best person to ask for that. And that's just, I'm not a legislator. I don't write legislation for a reason, right?
And so, thank you. On one hand, you can kick that back to the sponsors.
Representative Feige.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Previous to this year, when you showed up and had 36 students in your class, what was your class size?
32. That's still large. I've taught in Oklahoma and then up here. That's class sizes up here are as large as anywhere I've ever taught.
And how far back does your experience go?
This is my third year here. So 2 years where I was regularly averaging 32. We were at least able to keep my remedial classes, such as Algebra A, Algebra B, Integrated Math, closer to 20, which is a reasonable size. I can realistically hit 20 students in a day and give them one-on-one interaction. But 32, it will be a lecture hall at 32 or that approaching that number. I also got 3 years in Oklahoma. That's my other experience. And if Oklahoma can keep class sizes down, I've got to believe Alaska can.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From where you sit, mm-hmm. at the end of the whip, mm-hmm. where do you see the efficiencies coming from? Because this is a student-based allocation. You get more students, you get more money. So why, if the averages have been around 30 students per classroom, what kind of efficiencies do we have to, impose to get it down to 20? Which puts, in theory, more money going into the classroom instead of other things.
As in, where could we save that money? If you're talking about
where can you gain the efficiency?
Let's just a simple math number that runs through my head. I've got 30 kids in a class, on average. If you took every class with 30 kids and dropped it to 20 kids, you have simply increased your staff by 50%. Right? That's half my kids. Go on. Increasing by staff by 50% would require, that's not an efficiency thing. As we pointed out, 85% of your money already goes into staff. It would take a significant improvement in the extent to which education is funded in the state. I mean, you can talk about inefficiencies and we can work around the edges, but you're not going to make up enough money to actually significantly drop your class sizes without significantly more funding than you're even talking about here.
Okay, what you're proposing is to add 50% for teachers. What I'm proposing is to take people that are already getting paid, positions that are already getting paid, that aren't teachers, and making them teachers. Yes, you will have to bring in more teachers.
When he gets to be superintendent of schools, he'll get to make that decision.
And I encourage you to take those, and this is why I say, go to your school board and go to your superintendent. Your school board certainly is responsible to you as constituents, just as they are, as you are responsible to them. And I encourage you to make those cases to them. But yeah, I'm not the planner, and I certainly don't get to make those decisions. Don't I wish I was?
Someday.
Good point. Thank you for your testimony. I really didn't plan as well as I should have. We have two people in the room here, I believe, are from Anchorage and Chugiak, and if they would want to testify, I'm not sure, Jacob Berra and Andrea Lang, if maybe we give them a chance, because the people online can get online far easier. Thank you for your testimony, sir, and I hope you become superintendent someday. You come together. We want to make sure and get you in. I know you've traveled, so.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. For the
record, coming.
For the record, my name is Jacob Barrow. My wife and I both teach for the Anchorage School District, and we have a 2-year-old son, Leaf, that will eventually attend Anchorage Public Schools. I'd like to speak this morning in favor of House Bill 143. I believe Alaska has the capacity and resources to create the strongest educational system here in the nation. We all agree in the importance of education, especially early childhood education, which my wife teaches, in setting young Alaskans on a path to success here in life. My school, Eagle River High School, is full of strong teachers who give everything they have to our students. Our graduation rates at Eagle River are 89%, well above the district average. We volunteer to serve as teachers on a 9th grade success committee that tracks freshmen as they start their high school career, and we pride ourselves as a staff on eating our lunches not in a staff lounge, but at a desk with our students. Yet every year, we're being asked to do more with less. I am the only art teacher at my school, and where most teachers are asked to lead no more than 3 different courses in a given day, I teach 5 different groups, including an advanced placement course, in order to provide a complete curriculum. As a department chair and member of my school's leadership committee, we're constantly trying to keep class sizes at a reasonable level as we're asked to each year to cut positions. I believe this bill is a step in the right direction towards providing more financial security now in the future for Alaskan schools and the best possible educational opportunities for my son and our Alaskan students. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And do you want to testify first and then maybe we can ask questions together?
Sure.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Andrea Lang. And I teach at Eagle River High School with Jacob, and I'm here to speak on behalf of HB 143. Before I start, I'm a choir, theater, and guitar teacher, and a lot of people say, oh, isn't that fun? It's a lot of work. It's an incredible amount of work. And yes, it's fun. I love my kids. I absolutely adore my kids. However, a lot of people don't see my progress because you can't bubble in my progress and my kids' progress. And what you can see is my kids who are going on to be arts people. It's not just a side thing for them. I have a kid in the last couple of years, Caitlin Cullums went to UAA to start her career in vocal performance. Ryan Jarvis went to Ithaca College for arts management. Cameron Jeffs got a full ride to Swanee to go for acting. Mary Butler went on to theater tech. Alex Reed went to communications in Texas. I have two students going to UAA for music, Matt Bowman and Becca Engman, and I also have Cody Schultz going to guitar in Rochester. So a lot of people think, okay, well, that was fun for them, but it's actually an occupation that they are going into. Additionally, I just had Large Group Choir Festival, which a lot of people attended. Carol Como emceed. Our school board was present. Several of our school board members were present, and they could see the progress of our kids. So over 100 kids from each school. Mine's the tiniest one. I have 40. 40 in my choir. They went and they sang their little hearts out. And it's not just about singing. It's about presentation. It's about performance. It's about discipline. It's about preparation. It's about all these things, like I said, that you can't bubble in at a test. I create the presenters and the speakers and the performers and the humanists and the communicators and the artists. And those are things that a lot of people are not taking into consideration. So when I hear people say, show what progress you've made, I can show what progress I've made, but you usually don't see it unless you come to my concerts and things. Anyway, I'll keep going. Hang on. What I do is I struggle to keep my kids engaged, even though I might have large class sizes. And in some of my classes, I don't have that problem. But in guitar, when I get infused with 28 kids to take guitar, that's kind of a hard thing to do. And a lot of people say 28 kids in a class, that doesn't sound bad, but it's guitar. It's a different kind of thing, and I think we need to keep those things into consideration, too. Also, materials. A lot of times my kids have to share materials instead of having their own, because we're fighting the battle as far as sufficient supplies. During my time in Juneau here, I've spoken to a lot of legislators, and like I said, you know, they've asked me, well, you know, it's hard to give money to something that looks like it's not improving, and I think I've just testified to the fact that you don't always see that. I know there are several issues that complicate what seems to be a no-brainer to me in handing over money, but I only can speak to what I know. I know that my kids need more time. They need my time. I know that my kids need manageable class sizes. I know my kids need materials, and I know my kids need the best education that we can give them. And right now, I know that the state is flush with money. Will that always be the case? I don't know. But when I see billions of dollars being given away to corporations, and I see that people aren't willing to give small amounts in comparison to educating the kids of Alaska, that's, to me, I just don't understand it. So please, please consider passing HB 143. Thank you.
I believe you teach theater.
Am I being melodramatic?
No. No. Very engaging. Any questions from committee? Representative Wilson.
I just want to make a comment. You know, I really understand what you're saying and know it. I was a school nurse, and I taught in schools, not in this state, but in another state. And I know where you're coming from, and we most of the people on this committee chose to be on education because it's important to us also. And I wish you were giving this presentation in front of the finance committee instead of this committee. But you did a good job, and thank you very much for coming up and testifying.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to reiterate that we recognize what you're talking about, and we've been concentrating on student engagement and keeping those kids in school, and you know, all of the data that we've seen, it doesn't matter if it's VOTEC or music or art or those things that engage students' minds and makes them willing to put up with some of the other things that they don't like to stay involved in school. So it's not that we don't recognize the contributions that you're making by engaging students and engaging us as well. Because thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do have a few minutes here yet, and I understand we do have Kodiak online. Stuart McDonald, are you there? The other body is hearing the same bill, and that's why they're running back and forth between microphones, because they've been testifying on the same issue in just in different rooms. So, Stuart McDonald, are you there, sir?
Thank you, Chairman Alan Dick. This is Stuart McDonald, Superintendent of Schools for Kodiak Island Borough School District. I'm here with a few community members. I'll try and be as brief as I can. I work with all of our community groups across the Kodiak Island Archipelago, and several folks had given me letters here. There won't be enough time for me to read it, but I just wanted to sum up a couple of them real quick. Stephanie Bookinger from Chiniak, Alaska. Chiniak is home of a K-10 program that has fewer than 20 students in it. And she just wanted everybody to know that we really support the notion of House Bill 143 or even Senate Bill 84, which hasn't come to you yet. They are working extremely hard in their community to provide opportunities for their just a couple of senior students that they have. But because of the multi-year funding, students in that program have been able to get coursework and vocational program studies in collaboration with our town school. Principal Watkins runs Kodiak High School, and she just really urged everyone to support this continued effort. Barbara Gray from one of our logging camps on Afognak Island wanted to share that without that past funding and without future funding increases to sustain the technology, the video teleconferencing for that small logging camp school just will not happen. And these students rarely get an opportunity to be able to take the courses they need academically when they need them, and also have opportunities to learn things that are going to give them a chance to compete in the world economy. And they also strongly urge this funding. We're a people business. 80% of our budget is about hiring people that deliver programs. When we get flat funded, we end up having to cut the only thing that we actually have flexibility in, and that's people. And when we lose people, we lose programs. And we strongly urge that the work that we're doing, I invite everybody on the committee to Kodiak, and I can show you line by line in our budget and classroom to classroom what's going on in our programs, and can share the data with you. And hopefully Bill Watkins, our principal here, can share some more data with you. But we're doing great things for the most diverse number of kids we've ever been able to serve, and just wanted to put my plug in for that and strongly support House Bill 143.
Thank you, Stuart. And we do have Rod, is it McCoy?
Yes.
Well, my ability to pronounce your name is in direct proportion to your ability to write clearly, so.
Well, I'm not a doctor. I'm a teacher. Maybe I should have written more carefully.
If you would state your name for the record. And
May I put the Rod McCoy?
Oh, sure. Please.
This brought over from Joe Thomas's testimony in favor of Senate Bill, their Senate Bill 84, and which is of course a BSA bill. And you can see it's a pretty impressive collection.
Thank you.
And also, recently they add the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce is noted to be a specifically conservative group. They want you to fund at a inflationary proofing rate education. I'm an advocate for children. I've had the luxury of being sent down here by NEA Alaska for now my 15th year. And it's always a pleasure for me to sit in front of representatives and speak the case for education, something that I and my family very strongly believe in, and has been very important in our lives. And my family, my extended family, have reached very well into the advantages that education gives us in our personal lives and in our professional lives. We are also, in my family, a family of educators. My wife's mom, my mom, were teachers. Two of my three students, or my children, are teachers. My wife was a teacher and is now teaches teachers at APU. She's one time the state PTA president. Jackson for a time was the national secretary of the PTA. We have a very strong commitment to the profession of education. We believe in it. We believe that bringing our children into the next generation, into our culture, and into being knowledgeable people is an imperative part of any democratic, particularly democratic society. You must have, if Thomas Jefferson had anything to say about it, you must have a learned population in order to question and think and analyze and to make good choices. So I urge you, don't do as I've seen all the time I've come down here. Maybe my colleagues would chide me and saying, your 15 years has always watched this backslide. Your 15 years of coming down here hasn't done you any good at all. Because I always hear this, oh, we're fully funding education. If you put money in a bank account that has no interest bearing to it, at the end of the year, you got less than what you started with. You know that. And at the end of the year, we have consistently come up with less for our children. Less for our children in a state that doesn't need to make that kind of move. Please, no less for our children. And may I also speak? I believe in the profession of teaching. Why constantly offer less for such a profession? I thank you very much.
Thank you. We are out of time. We will keep public testimony open on this bill, and we will hear HB 145 on Friday, and we probably continue public testimony on this as well on Friday. Apologize to the people online that didn't get their opportunity, but we did get everybody that traveled all the way down here, so I feel good about that. And so we will, okay, we'll be under the 24-hour rules soon. We'll let you know if the committee hearing is scheduled. And the Education Committee is adjourned.